We are at Aviation Gateway Park for On the Fly today. We are doing education. We're focusing on education, even though, as Dave said a little bit ago, there's a lot of other things going on right here. Focusing on education, we're talking to some fellows from Emory-Riddle University about admissions and programs and career paths, so to speak. And we're going to focus on the pilot career mainly for the next segment here, for the next 10, 12 minutes. And then we're going to bring in some regional airlines, because after you drop them off, that's probably where they're going to go. Mm-hmm. So we'll continue that path with them. So leading up to that, let's go back to admissions. David just asked you what they should focus on, and one of the things that you said is science and math, and all that STEM stuff, of course, is very,
very
important for a lot of these more technical type careers. But if there's a certain weakness here or there, that should not deter a prospective pilot from continuing on that career, right?
Absolutely true. And I will say there is math and science involved, but one of the other things that I appreciated so much about Embry-Riddle was, having done the aeronautical science program, even myself, my calculus teacher, he knew we did not want to become physicists or mathematicians. So the math was so applicable. I remember one of the lessons he was trying to teach us was, he used aviation for it. He's like, your buddy decided to go hike a mountain and got stranded out there. So you got in your Cessna 172, you're doing 80 knots. How soon do you have to throw the package out so he catches it? And it is math, and there's only so much twisting you can do. But the fact that he applied it to aviation just actually made it fun.
Well, and we're so many of us, especially pilots, are visual learners. And to see that somehow, even on a whiteboard, yes. Okay, here they are stranded. Here's the, you know, it just makes more sense.
It helps tremendously. So you don't have to be strong in math. We will provide you with the tools to get you to where you need to be and to give you the skills that you need to. And again, we're applying it to the industry. We're not teaching you some random math that you'll never use. We're teaching you things that will help you calculate your stop distance on a runway later on, your weight and balance and things like that.
So can I come in cold with no hours in terms of my flight experience, starting my collegiate education, moving up to the airlines?
Absolutely. That's actually how I did it. That's not how all students do it, but there is a good amount of students that come in with no experience or no prior experience. And I will say, at Embry-Riddle, we do like that. Again, if a student brings in the experience, we're not upset. We don't discourage that. But we are preparing students to work in the airlines, corporate, or military industry. Yeah, you can go fly and see Nana and Granddaddy on the weekends, but that's not why we're training you. So there's a technique that we apply that has made us stand out with the airlines and with different companies, because we're preparing them for that career.
Right, so what are the airlines' expectations for the students that are coming out of school? Is there something specific that they're looking for that has one student stand out versus another?
That would be a little difficult to answer. I will say the airlines are coming to campus and they're watching what our students are doing. They're in that crew technique analysis class or crew resource management class, and they're seeing the dynamics and all that. I do think, I would obviously ask the regionals, but I would like to believe that we stand out because of that, because that we're applying or we're trying to teach students just not just the basics of flying, but things beyond, like crew resource management I mentioned. How do I work in the cockpit environment? How do I work with the captain? You can't board an aircraft, look at the captain and say, I'm not going to fly. I don't get along with you, and get off.
Right.
So we teach students different skills that will help them be successful later on.
Congress pretty much mandated this new pathway program a few years ago. And the colleges and the airlines have done a great job of shuffling their stack to get it in line, to make it a path. And that's what we'll do now. We'll talk about that. Okay. Now I'm in your pilot program. You've accepted me. I'm in your pilot program. I want to go fly for, I'll use the guys that we're going to talk to at the bottom of the hour, GoJet or ExpressJet. I want to fly for them and on my way to a major airline, United, Delta, Alaska, whomever. What now? What courses are you going to want me to take, and how is that going to work over my 4 years? We'll just outline it.
Of course, yes. Yeah. So you come to Embry-Riddle, you're going to start with obviously your college education plus the flight. You start with the private pilot certificate. If you take your private pilot certificate elsewhere, that's fine, but you do need to stop at that point, especially if you want the 500-hour credit that Embry-Riddle and many other universities offer.
Hit on that really quick. This is what Congress did a few years ago due to the crash of a regional airliner, and they blamed it on an experience level issue. And so this is what they did. Go ahead.
Correct. So when that happened, Embry-Riddle was actually among the first universities to go in to make a case about it, you know, the experience versus time issue. And we were among the first to receive an exception or extension. Congress evaluated everything and said, yes, the education offered at many of these institutions is significant enough that they don't have to build this time. So it's a 1,500-hour requirement to act as pilot of any U.S. flagship carrier for Part 121 operations. If a student goes to a certain list of universities and gets their degree, they can receive a credit for that degree. It varies by university. At Embry-Riddle, it's a 500-hour credit that they receive. And that's important to know because once they're done with their private, they'll do their instrument, then they'll do their commercial. Depending on the track, they'll do commercial multi-add-on or commercial single add-on and ultimately get them to have that commercial certificate, which is what you need to make money as a pilot in the United States. At that point, a lot of students will elect to do some flight instructing because even at that point, because of how well-developed the programs are, students don't have even 1,000 hours.
How many hours do they typically have coming out of that professional pilot program?
It varies. I'd say between 250 to 300 hours possibly.
So we're still quite a ways away. Yeah. So they're going to either instruct or they're going to go out and fly banners, or they're going to tow gliders, or they're going to fly freight at night.
Or go corporate. If you want to fly 131 and fly freight, the requirements for that is significantly different, and then you can transition into the airlines later on if you wish. But absolutely, a lot of students pick the flight instructor route because most of the time you'll be done with your commercial ratings by your junior sophomore year. Still have 2 years to go. So a lot of students will get the instructor certificates, fly as a flight instructor, and if they do that, yeah, by the time they complete their degree, maybe a little bit beyond, they'll have the 1,000-hour requirement.
And so that's also their college job.
Yeah. So coming a practical question from a parent, you know, what does tuition cost, you know, heading down the pilot pathway?
That's a really good question, and it varies student to student. And I will say it's very hard to put that specific price tag because we've seen students who are determined, committed. They'll study for the unit. So when their flight instructor says, Chris, show me a power on stall or turn us around a point, they're executing the maneuver to the best of their ability, and it's tweaking. You have other students who perhaps aren't grasping or not putting forth that effort, and then it takes them 3 hours because the instructor says, show me a power on stall, and they don't even know what that is. Okay. So that plays a significant role in the ultimate price. So you have the cost of tuition, and the cost of flight is always separate. The cost of flight at Embry-Riddle for all 4 years is anywhere between $50,000 to $60,000 additional dollars, and that's all the way up to the commercial multi-engine certificate. Those are high averages. We've opted to share those higher averages to over-inform families than to ill-inform them. We feel that works and serves families better, but that's not nearly what I spend and what a lot of other students spend.
Sure.
And speaking of money, so you were talking about scholarships. You drive them right into the program right away. You said, how much of that can be? I know flight is kind of tough to get scholarships for. The study stuff, the other classes, not so much. But
so this is something that I now that I'm on this side of the pond, I really wish I would have known prior. And what I wish I would have known prior is just the amount of scholarships that are out there. There's a lot of different opportunities. Millions of dollars actually go unclaimed. And for a scholarship to go unclaimed, it means that the donor didn't receive a single application. We even had once a male student receive a female scholarship because he applied by accident and he was the only person that applied. It's incredible how few people take the time to do that. So if you put forth the effort, you can find the money to cover tuition and cover flight because that's part of your cost of attendance.
So what's the placement rate for your graduates that are heading out into the workforce?
So for all of our students, over 90% of our students are employed within 1 year after graduation in the field that they studied. And we're really proud of that because it's not a temporary job. It's not getting by in what they want 1 year after graduation. There's a small percentage beyond that are in graduate studies after all. And I don't know if you folks know this, but according to a documentary done recently by Ivory Tower, they estimate that barely 32% of our nation's graduates are finding a job within 1 year after graduation, the field that they study.
Excellent.
That's really good.
That's pretty phenomenal.
You know, and speaking to that really quick, talk some numbers. And I don't know the numbers. You may know more about the numbers. How short are we? We are going to be short on pilots and mechanics, too, both. So let's do that real quick.
Well, we actually just read the most recent Boeing study that was sent to us yesterday by a fellow faculty member. And it was over 600,000 for each cohort there for pilots and technicians. Of course, Boeing is just looking at commercial. They're just looking at the commercial side. So they're not looking at GA, corporate aviation, and all that. So you're looking at a tremendous opportunity for anybody that's looking to get into the industry, both in the cockpit or on the maintenance side, on the support side. For our students and the degree program that I work in, we're at about 98% placement rate.
Wow.
And you know, most of the students, especially the ones that really go after it and get involved with the campus, with the programs, they're going to be fielding several offers.
I know the internship programs are very valuable too. And both of you have those, I'm assuming, and you're both your degree programs.
I can't sell those enough, to be honest. Yeah. That's one of the things that I didn't do that I wish I would have done. Students who do internships and co-ops tend to get into that flight deck, into that career dream job sooner than other students. Internships and co-ops are interviews, extended interviews in essence. It's a great way for the company to get to know you, and I would argue that when resumes come in, many companies will start with who interned and who co-oped with us first.
Yeah, it's kind of a cutout.
Yes. Yep.
Cutout, so to speak. So going forward, let's talk about that restricted ATP now. So typically when you get done with college, you're about 22 years old. Now you've got your CFI, you're 22 years old. The regular ATP is 23. You're required to have an ATP to fly for a 121 carrier, even as a first officer now. So the restricted ATP lowers that time, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Or the age, I
mean. Yeah, that is correct. There's a second-in-command certificate that's issued, and then the restricted ATP comes along with that. And because of all the logistics with that, though, the FAA has said that students have to do their instrument beyond at the institution. Because once you start your instrument training, you start preparing for that restricted ATP and the second-in-command certificate.
So instrument, commercial, and multi as well?
Yep. That's mm-hmm. correct.
Okay. So that's why you're suggesting people only get their private beforehand.
If they want. If you're listening and you haven't flown and you were thinking about starting that when you went to college, that's absolutely fine as well. We have those introductory courses. We'll prepare you, and we'll get you started on that right path as well.
Yeah. And one thing I want to stress is that there's a lot of flying families. You know, there's a lot of kids that come from families, and they're all over Oshkosh today.
Right.
You can see them walking around. You see them at the airplanes camping with their mom and dad, you know, or their uncles and aunts or whoever, their neighbors. A lot of them are coming from a flying community. So some of these kids, I know one of the kids who I did a private for in the last couple of years, he's 20 years old now, and he's got close to 4,000 hours of flying time. But he has no college.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have to worry about the restricted ATP. So he can just bang through the program, get the degree. And, you know, we have a moment. Let's quickly talk about the online programs.
So I will say also, for students who have those 4,000 hours, Embry-Riddle offers an aeronautics degree where it's just the degree program specific. It doesn't come with the flight to help them prepare for that. Embry-Riddle has also the worldwide programs, as you mentioned. They were designed originally for adult learners and people who need a flexible schedule.
Military, I know, is big.
And that is a big part of it, yeah. So they are online. We've really stepped it up, too, where it's not just a module online, but we have virtual classrooms now where they can actually log on. They see their professor. As students are talking, they can see classmates who have cameras as well. So the interaction has increased significantly, and they can log in during that time, they can log in after, and ultimately get either an associate's or a bachelor's or even master's degree if they so wish.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us today on EA Radio. We certainly appreciate all your in-depth knowledge and advising our listeners on how
we appreciate
to go about
you guys
this.
Giving us a chance.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We're going to continue very shortly, Dave, with some airline guys and take it from the university and move it up the path. J-Mont G, you're listening to EAA Radio.